taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution, teach the rising generation to be free, and freedom is what we're talking about today. This swelling movement of freedom, and in some cases, the effort to suppress it. Now, when I was a kid, there was a song we used to listen to called Convoy. I can still hear the lyrics in my head. However, that's copyright, which is why I don't play it for you, because I don't want to violate someone's right to control their own creation, the song. But it told the story of a time when the country had a 55-mile-an-hour national speed limit and how truckers would work to get around that speed limit. And today we have government instituting, well, illegal mandates. And once again, we have truckers that are working to stop it. The 55-mile-an-hour national speed limit was illegal. It was unconstitutional. It was an illegal exercise of authority. Vaccine and mask mandates are illegal. They deprive you of a right protected by the Constitution of the United States. But they've been put in place. Now, in the 1970s, groups of truckers would get together and form these convoys to protect themselves from police enforcing an illegal law. Today, they're driving across the country to promote awareness of the problem and the fact that they're going to demonstrate in Washington, D.C. during the State of the Union address. Now, this actually is a mimic of what's been going on in Canada, right? We had the Freedom Convoy in Canada, which had some effect. If for nothing else, it showed just how tyrannical Justin Trudeau is. Now we have the People's Convoy, and it is, according to reports, growing. According to the Epoch Times, the largest truck convoy in the United States has grown in size since departing California and is attracting thousands of supporters as it makes its way toward the East Coast. The People's Convoy started with about 150 vehicles and grown to more than 250 as it's made its way through Texas and Oklahoma over the weekend. Now, a couple things I want to note. I don't have the number of how many trucks participated in the Canadian Freedom Convoy. I think it was more than a couple 150. Which brings up a concern. Is it just that the American truckers aren't able to participate, aren't willing to participate, or that the American people just don't have the same love of freedom that Canadian truckers do? I don't know. But it is nice to see somebody standing up and saying, no, this far and no farther. You've gone too far. It's time for you to step back. And this really is something most Americans should be able to get behind, if not physically, at least morally. See, according to the convoy organizers, they're against vaccine mandates, the federal government's continued use of a national emergency, and other actions to infringe on the rights of everyday Americans. And they're at least standing up and saying no, or at least trying to have their message heard. But you see, not everybody's real thrilled with the idea of having hundreds of truckers and possibly others showing up in the Capitol in time for the State of the Union address as a demonstration against the acts of, according to that, to the group, the Biden administration. Now, the people most logically not happy with this are, well, the politicians in Washington, D.C. Let's face it, the last thing politicians want is bad press. Now, in preparation for the recent State of the Union address, U.S. Capitol Police and other partners have put the fences back up. That's right, Washington, D.C. is once again becoming a fenced-in country. Or at least a fenced-in city, maybe. Yes, it's focused around the Capitol. Now, why are they doing this for the State of the Union address? Well, they don't want any disruption to the important work of Congress. The State of the Union, first of all, understand, the State of the Union, according to the Constitution, doesn't have to be an address. It doesn't have to be a big speech. All the president is required to do is from time to time inform Congress on the State of the Union and then to make suggestions of what he would like to see done, see them do in the future. But we've turned it into a big media event. So President Biden, all he has to do is send a letter to Congress saying, here's the State of the Union. That is literally all that is required by the Constitution. But no, we have this big event. We have dignitaries, people showing off. And, they say out of an abundance of caution, and in conjunction with the Secret Service, they're putting in perimeter fencing around the Capitol building for the State of the Union address. Now, personally, I don't listen to State of the Union addresses. They're propaganda shows. I mean, this is a public show. The idea that you're going to get any information about the actual State of the Union from this address is laughable. At best, what you're going to get is a political wish list from the party with the most influence, which right now is the Democratic Party, but it was the same when the Republicans did it. It's a show. But what does it say about the politicians in Washington, D.C.? That they're afraid of a bunch of truckers showing up and disrupting this dog and pony show. You know, it's interesting because fences serve one of two purposes. Now, at the national level, fences can be used to keep people out or keep people in. We were working on a fence on our southern border to keep people out who are not legally entering this country. But I'm old enough to remember the wall around East Germany. Actually, around West Germany. The wall that prevented East Germans from getting out. What became known as Churchill referred to as an iron curtain, a barricade, keeping people in. So you have these two ideas. Are we keeping people out or are we keeping people in? Similar to the wall that we were talking about on the southern border, the fence around the Capitol is to keep people out. Well, who are they keeping out? Is it illegal now for private citizens to get close to the Capitol? To demonstrate, to express themselves, to peaceably assemble? Has there been evidence that this convoy, members of the convoy, have been violent or disruptive? Sure, that much traffic may disrupt traffic flow. We're going to talk more about that in a minute, but has this been, are we dealing with those who've been known to riot or vandalize or anything like that? Now, this is an interesting symbol in my mind. A symbol of the isolation of those we send to Washington to represent us, to exercise our power in our name. When people get together to challenge what they're doing, they want to keep those people out. And they're willing to erect fences to do so. Now ask yourself, what is your representative's position on erecting fences? Again, if there were probable cause that these demonstrations would turn violent, maybe you've got a reason. But I think what we have now is we've become inured to a new idea that when people show up in Washington in large numbers, Congress is merely going to put the fences up to keep the riffraff out. And in their minds, the riffraff, well, is anybody who doesn't work for Congress, doesn't work in Congress, or doesn't work for the federal government, and or doesn't donate large amounts of money to their campaign. You know, years ago, there was a presidential candidate that said there were two Americas. And in many ways, he was right, but he was also wrong. So yes, there are two Americas. You have the political elite and everybody else. You have those that can buy influence at the political level. And you've got the deplorables. There is a standoff between the people who are supposed to be the public servants and the public themselves. And in my mind, that cannot bode well. So when we see, again, not only fences going up. Okay, here's a fence. We want to make sure the crowds don't once again enter the Capitol because, oh my God, they might trespass. They might scare us. We might have to go running for the hills because somebody took a selfie at our desk. But now they're talking about Humvee patrols. Within 24 hours of the President's State of the Union address, we have National Guard Humvees patrolling the streets. We've turned Capitol Hill into a military cordon. It's a military and it's a militarily annexed part of Washington, D.C. at the moment. Between the fences and the Humvees, that's what we've turned it into. You have 700 National Guardsmen are expected to be deployed in D.C. And their justification is the trucker convoy. The trucker convoy showing up to Washington, D.C. warrants setting up fences, having National Guardsmen on patrol, patrolling in Humvees. Why? Well, there's two reasons why. One is tyrants never like to have their positions challenged. They never actually want to see somebody, the masses disagree with them. They don't want to see it. They don't care if it happens. They just don't want to see it. And back on January 6th, a few people, I think, got overzealous and entered the Capitol. There's evidence that some of them were invited in by Capitol Police. And some of them did foolish things like, you know, enter private offices and take stuff or take selfies. Because of that, the truckers are now assumed to be dangerous insurrectionists. They didn't use the word, but that's how they're treating them. If they're going to set up fences, if they're going to have the National Guard deployed for them showing up. That isn't what you deal with a simple demonstration. Not even a truck convoy. Think of how many convoys. We've had trucker convoys in the past. We've had farmer convoys. We had farmers on tractors clog up all the streets of Washington, D.C., and I don't remember them pulling out the National Guard. Washington, D.C., the government in Washington, D.C., is isolating itself from the people it is supposed to be serving. Remember the Declaration of Independence preamble says, "We the people do ordain and establish the Constitution for the United States of America." We created that. It is a compact between the states, states of people. And we see Washington, D.C., the government in Washington, D.C., further isolating itself from the very people whose job it is for them to serve. What does that say about the state of America? What does that say about the state of freedom in America? Of self-government? Of liberty and rights? When a group of, again, right now, a few hundred trucks warrants this level of response. Now, DC is not the only one getting into the game when it comes to the convoys. The state of Illinois, the state police of Illinois, have warned that, it says, a convoy causing traffic delays and potentially crashes is planned over the next few days. This was in an article from Just the News. When was this? Back on February 27th, so over the weekend. So the state police are warning participants of legal consequences in a peaceful, mobile demonstration. Now, according to the state police, they've become aware that truckers plan to conduct a convoy. They put convoy in quotes. I love that. Causing traffic delays and potentially crashes. Really? Driving through a section of your state in a line in a convoy is now dangerous. The state police division of patrol colonel said, though the Illinois State Police respects the right of citizens to express their opinions in a lawful manner, there is great concern with any event that is designed to impede or block the normal and reasonable movement of traffic. Is that the plan? Does the state police, and again, maybe that is the plan. Maybe they've announced that what we're going to do is we're going to block up all the streets and we're going to run slow. We're going to make things a mess, which, again, infringes on the rights of the rest of the citizens. Okay. But the colonel went on, traffic backups are a major contributing cause to traffic crashes, which lead to property damage, personal injury, and even death. A planned event designed to impede normal traffic flow is dangerous to the innocent motoring public. Annoying, yes. Dangerous? Yeah, I'm sorry. This would be a lot more believable if the state of Illinois was anywhere near this reaction to other events in the state that impeded the flow of traffic and that was actually dangerous to innocent public members of the public. Now, they did go on to say, those who choose to participate in events that intentionally endanger the public and violate Illinois law will be subject to the enforcement of applicable laws and could potentially be held liable for traffic crashes occurring as a result of their actions. The only thing in there that seemed to make sense legally was, okay, did you violate state law? In other words, the people have a right, guaranteed by the Constitution of the state of Illinois, to peaceably assemble. It doesn't say peaceably assemble except on the highway and convoys. So here we have the state of Illinois, the state police of Illinois, attempting to intimidate people to prevent them from peaceably assembling. Now, all they had to do is say, listen, people, if you are out there, if you intentionally endanger the public, if you violate Illinois law, we will enforce the law. That's all they have to say. But look at everything they wrap around it. They try to make a convoy look like an evil, dangerous, violent attack on the everyday people of the state of Illinois. This is called framing. This is called, you know, you're establishing a viewpoint from which to view these actions so that when they crack down on these members of the convoy, they have justification. See, convoy, they're dangerous. They cause traffic jams. They cause accidents. We can't allow this to happen. Am I surprised that it happened in a tyrannical state like Illinois? Not the least bit at all. I am not surprised. This is exactly what I expect from these types of states. We don't like what you're doing, so we're going to frame it as something hideous and dangerous so we can crack down on it. been done before. They, again, they never complained about the riots in 2020. No, those are not a big deal. Those are mostly peaceful. Buildings are burning, but they're mostly peaceful. With the exception of one traffic accident in Oklahoma, I'm not aware of anything these convoys have done that have been illegal, dangerous, or to themselves or anyone else. But it's framing. It's a way to excuse the infringement on the potential infringement on their rights. They haven't done it yet. This to me, again, framing, setting the stage. This really isn't any different than saying COVID's going to kill everyone. So that's our excuse for taking away your rights. Or, you know, a few people entered the Capitol and acted stupid. Therefore, we're going to lock them all up and throw away the key and we'll worry about the trials and stuff later. Pretending that people demonstrating against an election where the law was violated, the Constitution was violated. There's evidence that the Constitution was violated. But we want to frame them as insurrectionists and dangerous people. And how dare you question an election by the same people that 4 years ago were ranting and raving and out of their minds questioning an election. See, this is the importance of freedom, of the right to peaceably assemble, of the right to speak and to publish without government interference. So that when government does something stupid like this, we can hear about it. We can let people know. We can share. As the Bible says, one side seems right until you hear the other side. Well, here's the other side. You have Washington, D.C., and Illinois State Police looking to infringe on the rights of the people to peaceably assemble. And they're justifying it by the assumption that they may be dangerous. Well, you know what? You get into a motor car, you may get into an accident. We're not even punishing people for what they do. We're punishing people for what they may do. And we're doing it based on a political agenda. What does that say about freedom and liberty in America? Now, while the state police in Illinois are making plans to, punish those in the convoy for anything they can find. It reminds me, there was a town near where I lived in upstate New York that was known, infamously known, for giving out tickets for the least little offense. Yeah. The speed limit was 35. If you went through at 38, you might get a ticket. This is what it sounds like. We're going to crack down on, we're going to look for on any dissent. But there's another way that we see states, or in this case, cities, using their power to minimize dissent, silence dissent, intimidate people against dissent. New York City, the police department of New York City have sent about 100 police officers to Washington, D.C. to help with security for President for the State of the Union address. Now, why would you have cities sending law enforcement, extra law enforcement to D.C.? Why do we have this? Why do we have reports of D.C. asking states to send National Guard troops? The answer is simple. They're afraid people are going to show up and challenge what they have to say. Now, again, if there were evidence, if there were probable cause that a group of truckers was going to cause a problem, well, then maybe you'd have a justification. But has there been any probable cause? Or are those in Washington, D.C. just so afraid of the public, so afraid of the people at large, that when they actually show up and challenge what they have to say, they have to bunker down behind fences and police and guardsmen? This tells me a lot about the mentality of the government in Washington, D.C. They think themselves as rulers. They act as rulers. And while in Marie Antoinette's time, the line was, let them eat cake. Here, it's do whatever they want. Just leave us alone. Stay away from us. We don't look at this as maybe there's something that people are trying to tell us. No, how do we isolate ourselves from the people who are complaining about what we do? It's very interesting that the states, the constitution of most of the states say that all power is inherent in the people. But in Washington, D.C., they don't want to hear that. They don't want power to be in the people. They want to keep the people away from them so that they continue on with the fiction that they have all the power. This is going to be a very interesting time as we deal with the aftermath of the State of the Union address and the trucker convoy. As we deal with the aftermath of the Canadian convoy, as well as the war in Ukraine. Because in all of these situations, there's one thing in common. You have people trying to impose their will on others and cracking down on those who stand up and say no. You see, it's one thing to use force to defend yourself. It's another one to use force to impose your will on others. So whether it's Trudeau in Canada, Biden here in the U.S., or Putin in Russia, what you see are three men using force to impose their will on others. Doesn't sound like a very free country, does it? Now, I have to take a break, but before I do, please check out a couple things. You know, part of the misunderstanding is we don't understand the Constitution. People don't read it. People don't study it. They don't know what it says. They don't know how to apply it. That's part of what we do here at Constitution Study, but we're not the only ones. So head over to constitutionstudy.com and you'll find out what we're doing here. But please also head over to 917 Society. That's 917, the numbers, 917society.org. And check out what they're doing. They're trying to put a constitution in the hands of every eighth grader in the country. And they're working with teachers so they can actually have lessons about what the Constitution says. Thomas Jefferson said, education was a true corrective of constitutional abuses. That's what we need to do. We need to educate ourselves, and we need to educate others. The Constitution Study, the 917 Society, that's what we're doing. We have slightly different focuses. We're doing two different areas, but the goal is the same, to help educate the American people about the supreme law of the land. Also, please head over to healthycell.com. The food we eat, more and more of it's processed, less and less of it is fresh. And our bodies need the vitamins and nutrients that we're missing from by eating a lot of processed food. And let's face it, vitamins haven't changed much since the 1930s, until Healthy Cell came along. They've designed a pill-free supplement that is absorbed better into your body. They have different formulas for different needs. Now, I'm working on my travel arrangements. I'm trying to do a couple tours through the country this year. And one thing I know is when I'm on the road, I tend not to sleep very well, which is why I use REM sleep. It's a gel. I either take the gel or sometimes I'll mix it into a drink and it'll help me get sleepy, fall asleep, stay asleep so I can wake up rested and ready to attack the day. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order. Just go to healthycell.com, try REM sleep or any of their products. Just use the code OUTLOUD at checkout and they will give you 20% off your first order. I use this product. My family uses this product. We love what we've been getting from Healthy Cell. So give it a try. That's healthycell.com. Use the code OUTLOUD at checkout to get 20% off your first order.
It's time to rethink COVID disinfection. A study by Harvard, Drexel, and Virginia Tech concluded, we don't have a single documented case of COVID transmission through surfaces. The reality is that COVID spreads mainly through the air. Shared air is the problem, not shared surfaces. The solution is the Genesis Fogger, which uses natural HOCl to disinfect both air and surfaces simultaneously. It's perfect for home or business. NIH says HOCl may well be the disinfectant of choice for coronaviruses. There's nothing more natural or more effective. Genesis fogs at the precise particle size to combat COVID and other harmful pathogens. It's what's missing from your disinfecting protocol. Visit genesisfogger.com. America Out Loud listeners receive a 15% discount with promo code OUTLOUD at genesisfogger.com/outloud.
Dr. Vladimir Zelenko knows a thing or two about the immune system. He was nominated for a Nobel Prize for his early COVID-19 treatments, and now he's offering his Z-Stack supplements to our listeners at a discount. Just go to zstacklife.com/freedom. That's zstacklife.com/freedom.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. Today, we're dealing with the consequences of our decisions. The outcomes, what our children are going to live with because so many Americans are willing to give up their rights for the promise that they'd be safe from COVID. So I want to take a look at the consequences, but focusing mainly on the students. Now, we talked in the first half about the desire for school choice, how many parents have seen what their children are being taught and decide, maybe we can do better. We talked about curriculum transparency, letting the parents see, know, and have input on what our children are being taught. Next, I want to take a look at some of the backlash that has come from that. See, as I mentioned in the first half, Loudoun, Virginia has been kind of ground zero for this fight over who gets to decide about the curriculum. And as I said before, this fight is still going on. And it's not just with the parents. We have students defying mask mandates in Virginia. Now, I've lost track with all the news articles and stuff, but the last I knew, the governor suspended or removed the statewide mask mandate for schools. But see, Loudoun County School District, they still are trying to enforce a mask mandate. But what we have are a couple of families whose students are defying that. Now, what's interesting is the way the school has responded. You see, the students that refuse to comply with the school's order that is, I believe, in contradiction to state law, not sure about that. Apparently in contradiction to an executive order from the governor. Not sure where that fits as far as different states, the schools report to the governor or not, and there's a whole bunch of stuff. The student said, listen, these mandates are wrong. First of all, they're illegal because they deprive you of your liberty and control of your body without due process of law. That makes them a violation of the 14th Amendment as well as the 5th Amendment. And according to both Alexander Hamilton and the Supreme Court, that means those actions are void. They're meaningless. They're empty. But you see, bullies don't like being told that. So how has the school responded to these students? They've been segregated. They have been put in detention. They have been suspended. for actually thinking for themselves and not complying with an illegal order, an illegal mandate. I don't know if these families have actually pointed out to the schools that they are committing a federal crime by pushing these mask mandates. So I don't know if the school is understanding it is willfully violating their rights. But once again, we see bureaucrats, government actors, don't like being challenged, and they like to push back. In an interview on an NTD program, The Nation Speaks, they said they were not allowed to socialize with their peers even during lunchtime, which is an unmasked activity where they're sitting shoulder to shoulder with their friends for at least 30 minutes. So show you the irrationality. Even in situations where nobody is masked, they were segregating the issues. These students are being punished not because they're a threat to others, but because they are challenging the word of the bully, of the government. Now, later in the article, by the way, this article is on Epoch Times, the students explained why they chose not to wear the masks. One of the students named Annabelle said it was because, first of all, I can't breathe. Also gives me headaches. And a lot of teachers don't give you mask breaks outside. All three students said they followed the mandates under the governor order, but went against the mask policy once the governor issued his executive order, making masks optional. Now, the school officials told NTD that the governor's order on masks is being challenged in court, so it's not yet valid. Has a court suspended its operation? As far as I know, it has not. Therefore, the school's not on very strong ground there. Then again, maybe it has been. Maybe there's a stay on that, but I don't think so. So what are we seeing here? What are the consequences of willingly giving up your right to be at liberty and have control of your body without due process, to not be deprived of that without due process of law? We see students in one school district being pressured to wear a mask and then being punished for not wearing masks, even when masks are not worn. As I said, Loudoun County School District has been ground zero for many of these fights. It was for the fight over CRT, over transgender issues, and now it's over masks. I don't know what's in the water in Loudoun County, Virginia. I'd love to go out and meet and talk with some of the people in Loudoun County, Virginia. If anyone's out there, put them in touch. I'd love to come out and talk to them and understand them and maybe discuss some of the constitutional issues about what they're doing and what's going on there. So I think that'd be a great thing. Now, what are some of the other issues, some of the other consequences of our willingness to give up our rights without a fight? Well, the CDC has changed its what they call age-based language proficiency milestones. In other words, I don't know why it's the CDC that's doing this, but the CDC says, you know, hey, at a certain age, children should be able to say certain words or a certain number of words. It's a way of judging the proficiency. Is your child learning the skills necessary as they grow up? Now, the original standard was that 50% of kids should be saying 50 words by 24 months. So half of the kids should be saying 50 words by 2 years old. The new standard says 75% of children should be able to say 50 words by 30 months. Okay, what does this have to do with the consequences of our decisions? Well, if we back up and we look at standards from, say, Mayo Clinic, Stanford University, Cleveland Clinic, Kaiser Permanente, all of which say children should be able to say 50 words at 24 months. The American Speech Language Association notes that speaking fewer than 50 words at 24 months constitutes a language disorder. And other authorities say that by 30 months, a toddler should be able to say as many as 450 words, showing the development of language skills and the use of things like plurals and pronouns. Why did the CDC change their standard? Well, I think what they're trying to deal with is a problem that we were warned about. The damage that was done to our young children by their inability to see the mouths of family members. The people that they learn from the most, right, at that age. At up to 2 years old, you're being taught by your parents, by your siblings. And they learn by looking at them and imitating what they do with their mouth. But they weren't given that opportunity since so much of the time we wanted people masks. And the question is, has this created irreparable damage? Has the delay in the onset of language skills, has the limiting of the adoption of language skills become a long-term disability to these children? Now, I'm not a speech pathologist. I'm not a language expert. I do know that children, small children, learn a lot of things very quickly. And I believe, if my information is correct, there are certain things that if you don't learn at a young age, become much harder to learn. The example we always talk about is it's easier for a child to learn a new language than an adult. The pathways are not as ingrained in their minds. Could this be the same problem? In other words, could this masking, which once again, we've been told, did absolutely no good. Cloth and surgical masks, the CDC said, was no good against COVID. Could it be that there's going to be long-term consequences? That we may have a couple of years of children whose language skills will not be as developed because they couldn't see how other people talked? What about the impact of school lockdowns during 2020? Well, according to statistics obtained by the Wall Street Journal, before the pandemic, 55% of kindergartners were on track in reading skills, roughly half. That fell to 37% in the 2020-2021 school year and 47% for the current school year. The year before the pandemic, only 29% of kindergartners were deemed far behind in early literacy skills. That rose to 47% and 37% for the first and second year of the pandemic. There was an impact on shutting down schools. There's been an impact on the lockdown schools, and that will be a long-term impact. Because the older students get, where they're having literacy issues, the harder it is to catch up because of the peer pressure, the embarrassment of admitting you can't read or write well, or you can't speak or pronounce things well. This has the potential of having a segment of our society that is academically behind, that they're leading to being socially behind, because you never thought of what are the long-term impacts of shutting down schools or locking down the education so the kids are find it harder to progress. By the way, in an effort to protect the kids that are shown by the CDC data right from the beginning to be the least at risk. See, it's supposed to be that parents would sacrifice to protect their children. It used to be that society would sacrifice to protect our children. The whole idea of public schools is a public sacrifice to give our children the best opportunity to advance. Yeah, what have we seen? We've seen schools, in many cases driven by teachers' unions, push hard to keep kids out of school, to punish kids, to deprive them of their educational opportunities because the teachers were afraid. Either the teachers were afraid they might get sick, or just once they were working remotely for a while, decided they didn't want to go back into the classroom. This is the consequence of allowing our rights to be frittered away to be infringed upon without fighting for them, simply because we were told to. We were told that this is a smart thing to do without any evidence, and now there are consequences, and we're going to have to live with them, and our children are going to have to live with them. And oh, by the way, potentially our children's children will have to live with them. You see, a new study came out showing that the COVID-19 vaccines, quote-unquote vaccines, yeah, they're not really effective in preventing infection among 5 to 11-year-olds. Well, this should be no surprise because they haven't worked well at preventing the spread of any age. But they also found that the vaccine's effectiveness against severe disease has plummeted. See, they found by looking at the data that the Pfizer vaccine dropped from a 68% effectiveness in mid-December to just 12% the last week of January. Oh, and the protection against severe symptoms went from 100% in mid-December to just 48% in late January. And on the Omicron, the effectiveness against Omicron in children declined rapidly. Now, why is this important? Because this is an experimental drug. And the children ages 5 to 11 especially, have some of the lowest rates of both infection, hospitalization, and death. We're performing human medical experiments on children. And not only are we exposing them when their risk from the disease is very low, the effectiveness of this experiment has proven to be abysmal. Now, what does this have to do with our willingness to give up our rights? What about those of us that said we don't want the vaccine? We're not willing to be experimental. We have reasons, moral, medical, or religious, not to take the vaccine. We were called anti-vaxxers. We were called hate mongers. We were even called racists. And now that we're finding out that, guess what? You know what? We were right. The vaccine does not work. It does not prevent the spread, does not prevent infection, which is the purpose of a vaccine. It does not, its effectiveness at decreasing the symptoms seems to wane very quickly, especially among children. But yet they're still pushing to experiment on our children. See, when we stop thinking for ourselves, we just let government tell us, this is what you do. As soon as we say it's okay for you to vaccinate your children, do it. And if you don't, well, you're just a bad citizen. You're a harmful society. You need to be segregated. You need to be ostracized. What will be the long-term impact of experimenting on our children? I heard of a report today that the mRNA vaccines get your body to create spike proteins for a lot longer than they originally anticipated. What is the long-term impact on your body to these spike proteins? And what about our children? While they're growing, while they're developing, will there be a long-term impact? We don't know. We don't. And there will be a long-term impact on society from that. Now, have the American people learned anything from this? I have one more news story I want to get to, and this one is a bit different. This one doesn't have to deal with the schools. This doesn't deal with the vaccines or masks. This deals with this whole idea in society of free stuff. See, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is once again pleading for the president to cancel student debt. Now, what does this have to do with the long-term consequences of our decisions? Well, remember when cities and states decided they were going to shut everything down because they were afraid of this bug? And people said, well, how are we going to eat? How are we going to pay rent? The government will just print money and hand it to you. That's all we have to do. We'll just make up some ones and zeros, and we'll make up some money and fake money, and we'll hand it to you and make life better. And we're dealing with inflation because of that. But here we have a representative of an age group, a representative of a part of society that doesn't believe they're responsible for their decisions. See, if you borrowed money to go to school, you signed a contract. You said, I promise I will pay back this loan under these terms. That's what you did. But you see, years and years ago, we all sat back while Obama and Congress federalized student loans, basically took over the whole student loan process using the power of the federal government to violate the Constitution, to make up money, to collect taxes for things that they're not authorized to do. And we said, well, that'll be great. We'll just let the feds deal with it, not those dirty, rotten, evil banks. And now we're sitting here asking the American people to borrow even more money so that the people who borrowed money don't actually have to pay it off. Now, I want you to think about this for a minute. If you believe that it is not only right, but that you have a right to have your student loan debt canceled, do you think, would you also possibly think that the United States has a right to have its debt simply canceled, simply written off? No, it doesn't matter anymore. It's not the way the world works. See, this is a symptom of years of putting emotion above reality, of not wanting to suffer the consequences of our decisions. See, how many people took out student loans to get college degrees that either never completed or were for something that they can't get a job in? You borrowed money. You spent money for something that you're not finding value in. And now you want someone else to pay the price. That's not only not fair, that's greedy. See, what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is asking for is not generous. It's not magnanimous. It's not charitable. It's greedy. Why? She wants to bribe people with student loan debt with your dollars in time for the midterm elections. She wants herself and the rest of her party to get credit for bribing you with your own money. This is the face of greed. If she thinks student loan debt should be canceled, let her put her own money up to do it. She can get, was it, $50,000 for a dress? Can't she get someone to give her $50,000 to pay off someone's student loans? Rather than forcing the American people to do it for her. See, these are the consequences of our actions. The consequences of telling generations that there are no consequences. That do what you want and we'll bail you out. Whether that be student loans, whether that be bankrupt states, bankrupt cities, bankrupt corporations, bankrupt banks. Do whatever you want. There are no consequences because the government will come bail you out. Uncle Sam will pick up the tab. That's why Uncle Sam has a $30 trillion debt. That's why Uncle Sam spends almost $1 trillion more a year than he takes in. It's why, part of the reasons why, we have inflation that we do. It's why gas costs $3.50 a gallon, depending on where you are. But someone said in California, it's approaching $6 a gallon. Because everybody expected Uncle Sam to pick up the tab, to do for them what they were unwilling to do for themselves, to oversee the teaching of our children, the running of our economies. And now we're suffering the consequences. And ultimately, we've got no one to blame but ourselves. See, we sat back and let this happen. In many cases, we went out of the way and begged the government to do this for us. Who are you going to blame? Now, in November, we have a job review coming up. I know we call them an election. Think of it as a job review. Every person standing for election, from your town dog catcher to U.S. senator, is standing for a job review. And ask yourself, how have they done? Better yet, how are you judging how have they done? Are you looking at their fidelity to their oath to support the Constitution of your state in the United States? Or are you looking to how much they were willing to bribe you with? Because if you're making your judgment based on, well, AOC got us, you know, got Biden to forgive our school debts, then you're guilty of receiving a bribe. Well, they spent so much money on infrastructure or on they got me free internet or a free cell phone or schools. You're accepting a bribe. That bribe is being used to warp and distort your view of your elected representative. And because of that, they're evil, ignorant, and corrupt. Just as President James Garfield told us, if Congress is ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it's because the people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. And they will continue to be that way until we demand that they be intelligent, brave, and pure. So think of that as you start thinking of the 2022 midterms. Now, please be sure to make AmericaOutloud.com your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. It's important we do our part and share these stories, the articles, the podcasts, and videos so we can secure the blessings of liberty.
Maybe you'll stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day.